Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, Tiger fans, to Rock'em Nation's football podcast. I'm Nate Edwards. That's Brandon BK Kiley. This is Before the Box Score, post-game edition. Tigers lose. Did you know that was going to happen this year? Did you know the Tigers could possibly lose this year? They could. They did. It was a close game. It was a good game. I was actually looking for excuses to turn it off and do something else, and Missouri just kept bringing me back to it. But they eventually falter 35-28 when the last drive fizzled out off the hands of Dominic Lovett. So here we are, sitting 1-1 overall, 0-1 in the conference, against a team that was clearly much, much better than Missouri. And yet there we were, within one score towards the end of the game. BK, how do you feel about this game?
So it's interesting because if I was to give my top line takeaway from Mizzou losing, like just forget everything that happened within the game. But if you told me beforehand, hey, Mizzou loses 35-28, I'd have been like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Like that. I don't know how they got there. I don't know what the game looked like in and of itself. And every game has a story to be told. But if you just straight up said beforehand, Mizzou loses 35-28, I would have been like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Given the talent on both of these teams, given where they're at right now and their life cycle as a program, that's about right. Now, when I see that Kentucky ran for 340 yards on the ground and they had one player contribute an average of like 22 yards per touch, their quarterback made some just massive throws over the course of the game. The Tigers' offensive and defensive lines looked as bad, if not worse, than they did a week ago. Like, when you actually get down into the nitty gritty of what took place within the game, totally understand why, if you're a Missouri fan right now, you're saying to yourself, man, that sucked. I get it. But the result is the result. And I think there's a lot to be said for the way that Mizzou played in that game. And we'll get into all of that over the course of the day. But if I just had to give a headline, Mizzou kind of did what I expected them to do in that game, even though they went about it in a little different way.
Yeah, I mean, we going into this season, we thought that Kentucky or Missouri would be the third best team in the East, and maybe they even could be the second best team. Florida's been kind of odd over their two games. So maybe it could be the second best team. And then Georgia is just way far ahead of everybody. So like, this is not, you know, Kentucky is a pure program. Historically, yes. From a ceiling standpoint, a floor standpoint, yeah, absolutely. It's a basketball program who's got its stuff together on football and has been really good at being that median program. You know, that's the litmus test. If you lose to them, you're not a very good team. If you beat them, then you are a pretty good team. That's the test. Missouri's not a good team. I know we brought in some great impact transfers. I know we got some great impact freshmen. They're still freshmen. There's a lot of issues with the starters on this team, and they are Odom recruits. And they are two-star guys who are trying to be developed, and they're seniors, and it's not working. And yes, I'm talking about the defensive line. Let's start there. Defensive line is not good, flat out. I know you and I were texting last night, BK. You know, I pointed out, I was like, it kind of seems like they're just figuring out where Trajan Jeffcoat's lining up and going the other way. And you said that. You agreed. Like it, and that was just true for the rest of the game. And so if you have one good defensive end, he typically gets taken out of the play, either via, you know, reading him or just running away from him. And that's what Kentucky did all night. And then, yeah, there's a, you know, 18 pass plays that Will Levis threw, plus two sacks. They didn't have to do much. Chris Rodriguez could just run through holes as much as he wanted because the interior of the defensive line had no pressure. And the other defensive end that we trotted out there, whether it was Isaiah McGuire or Chris Turner, basically offered nothing as far as run defense. And of course, our linebackers, whether it be Chad Bailey, who's got some starting action, or Devin Nicholson or Blaze Aldridge, just don't know how to play the run. So it stinks. I'd like to point out, though, that we knew the defense was going to stink. That's why Ryan Walters left, because he knew he was going to get fired at the end of this year if he stuck around. Plus, he wasn't a Drinkwitz guy. So Steve Wilks inherited a mess, and he is doing what he can. But this is all about a talent deficiency, and you really saw it on the lines last night.
Yeah, they just didn't have it. And you mentioned the idea of like Kentucky getting to the line and basically saying, hey, where's Trajan Jeffco? Where's the number 18? Okay, he's on the left. Yeah, we're going to go to the right then. Like that's what they did all night long. And when you have an issue of your defensive tackles disappearing, I don't know what happened. They went into the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing and the laser hit them and now they're tiny and they can't do anything along the interior. I don't understand it, but that's where we are. And Missouri's defensive tackles are just completely ineffective. There's nobody that has stepped up on the other side at defensive end from Trajan Jeffcoat. And then you get to the linebackers, and we mentioned this last week. Even though Blaze Aldrich had the big-time numbers, tackles for loss, and sacks, and all of the glitz and the glamour, that was like the, hey, look at my left hand, don't look at what's going on in my right hand. There were issues there that showed up on film last week with Aldridge and Nicholson. It wasn't just Aldridge. It's all of the linebackers. And those showed up in a big way in this one. They over-pursued. They took bad angles. There were moments where they couldn't shed blocks. Missouri doesn't have an SEC caliber starting linebacker right now on the roster. They have one SEC caliber starting defensive end on the roster. They have maybe one. I'll count Makai Wingo as a half. We'll see on him. a maybe starting caliber defensive tackle. And there's your front six right now. That's super concerning, man. And they've got some playmakers on the back end, and that's kind of how they were able to get back into this thing, is they forced turnovers. I think if you're a Missouri fan, this is something that is both, it should inspire some confidence, and also it's maybe the worst thing to hear in some ways if you're just focused on 2021. This is not a schematic issue.
No.
This is a personnel issue. And that's good in some ways, because that means you might still have some hope in Steve Wilks. Like, I don't think he's the problem by any stretch right now.
No,
but it's also frustrating because that means, guys, I don't think this is going to get better this year. I mean, you'll play worse teams and so it'll look better, but the talent gap is not changing over the course of the season. The guys that you have are the guys that you have, and there's not a whole lot of dudes that are coming in to change that, at least in the here and now. So in the future, you hope that some of these defensive ends that they recruited last year and some of the linebackers that have been recruited over the last 2 years, they'll be able to come in and help. But for the here and now, man, this is what you got, and it's going to look ugly at times this year when you go up against quality opponents.
That's the thing. That's why I was so confused about the some of the confidence displayed about the Kentucky game. Kentucky has out-recruited us for the past 5 years. And, like, Drinkwitz is working to close that gap, but that means until that talent that we got this past year gets older, you know, the guys who are getting trotted out there on the field are going to be at an athletic disadvantage. Now, we still have Vanderbilt on the schedule. There's still North Texas on the schedule. SEMO's on the schedule, right? South Carolina is on the schedule. Like, we're not saying, like, like you said, like, these guys are going to suck every game. But when you're going up against a line like Kentucky's, and really even Tennessee, I mean, Tennessee recruits really well. They're not super good, but the athleticism is there. Like, when you go up against quality like that, you don't expect to win. Like, that's not how it works. I mean, you might get a couple wins. I'm talking like in-game wins, play to play, or, you know, drive to drive, and credit to Drinkwitz. He's been able to scheme around that. He knew, hey, guess what? We're not going to be opening holes at all. We're doing tight end passing game. We're getting Beatty involved in the passing game. We're going to hit these quick passes, which is what I called for in the preview, and just like keep the pass rush at bay and then run when they're starting to kind of get on their heels there. Like, Drinkwitz is smart enough to scheme around the weaknesses, but just because you're scheming around the weaknesses doesn't mean it's always going to work. And especially when you have to go on long drives, 10, 11, 12 play drives, something can go wrong. So until you get that talent that he has recruited on the field, this is how it's going to be when you go up against programs like this. Yeah, Mekhi Wingo still looks good. I wish Kyren Montgomery could be out there. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wish, I don't know, from the linebacker standpoint, there really is nobody. There is nobody on there that can fill in the spot. So it's going to be Blaze and it's going to be Devin. And wow, that's only two guys on the defense, but they are just a liability against the run. Central Michigan, when they were running the ball, I talked about this in Beyond the Box Score. They ran the ball at a 48% success rate. So basically every other run was getting, you know, the yardage needed to keep ahead of the chains. Kentucky's rushing success rate was 57.8%. 57%, almost 58%. When Chris Rodriguez ran the ball, which he did a lot, he ran for 7.6 yards per carry, yes, but he had a 63% success rate on his own. He got 4 yards 63% of the time as well. And when he got past that fourth yard, he ran 6.5 yards on average. I mean, what are you going to do? you need someone to step up to stop that, and there was no one there to stop it. The linebackers were out of position because the defensive line couldn't make a play. So this is what's going to happen when you play a team like this. You know, Georgia, okay, this is what they like to do, especially if JT Daniels is gone. Florida, they're going to do a lot of this too. I don't think Boston College will as much, nor North Texas or really anybody else. So
Arkansas, though.
Arkansas, you saw what they did against Texas. Good God.
Yep.
Good God. Like
that looked like a potential 50-50 game. I have no idea if Texas is good right now. I don't know what to make of Arkansas, but based on the performance that we saw this weekend, that's no longer a 50-50 game. Arkansas looks significantly better.
I will point this out, though. The secondary is not bad. It looks bad at times, especially mm-hmm. when you insist on starting Ish Burdine over Caleb Evans.
What are we doing?
I don't know. I can't think of a single reason why, other than we don't want to lose him to the transfer portal.
I mean, at the end of the game, Burdine finished with like 13 snaps, and he was clearly like, he was like the fourth corner on the depth chart at the end of the game. But he started the game, and he was in there for, I think, the entire first series, and then basically barely saw the field the rest of the game. I just don't understand it, man. It doesn't make sense to me. Caleb Evans is clearly the best cornerback on this roster, and I think Innis Rakestraw is good. I haven't seen a lot to suggest that he is actually good, but yeah. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Allie Green has shown in the past that he's been good. I haven't seen a ton of it this year, but I've seen in the past that he's been a successful cornerback, even against Power 5 teams. So I want to see more of those guys. Last week, I gave a ton of credit to Chris Abrams-Drain because he was awesome. This week, less so. I'll just leave it at that. But they do. They've got options at the back end. It's not perfect, but they've got real options. And that's just at corner. At safety, they've got some dudes.
Dude. Yeah. Jalen Carlise is Josh Bledsoe, Will Franklin incarnate so far. When he was out for the first half against Central Michigan, they felt it. Oh, no disrespect to Jelani Williams, but like Carlise is good enough to cover up the issues at linebacker and defensive line, or at least mitigate the pain. But he got the interception and he forced the fumble. Mm-hmm. Like two of the biggest plays of the game that kept Missouri in the game were him. And yeah, I know Abrams-Drain wasn't super good. He's not really much of a run-stopping corner. That's not really his bag. And I know he got burned on the one Wandale Robinson catch. Otherwise, like, you put Cat out there for pass coverage. You need someone else in there to stop the run, and Kentucky ran it a lot, so it didn't look super good. But I know Chris Abrams-Drain didn't have the greatest game, but I'm not concerned about his pass defense, which is what you're really looking for him to do.
He had a couple of moments where it didn't look great, but in general, like, that's going to happen against a lot of teams that Kentucky plays this year because Wandale Robinson is awesome, and he's just going to beat a lot of dudes. He finished that game, like I said earlier, with more than 20 yards per touch. Mizzou needs that guy. Like that's what Missouri's missing offensively right now. He's a playmaker that he erases mistakes offensively. Mm-hmm. You're in a bad play. Your quarterback needs an outlet. You throw it to him for 5 yards, and he gets you 20 on the ground. it's kind of what we thought Mookie Cooper might be. I don't think Mookie's healthy right now. I think that's becoming increasingly clear as we watch more. We thought there was a chance that Dominic Lovett could be that guy. I told you whenever he committed, I didn't think he was ready. I thought he was going to be a good player. He's got all the talent in the world, but his high school film was basically him running go routes. Yeah. And that just doesn't work in the SEC. It doesn't work against this level. Teams are going to figure that out and they're going to say, okay, yeah, I'm just not going to let you beat me deep. And so far, that's kind of all he's doing. He's just running like slants and goes and drags, and that's not enough. You're going to need to expand your route tree to be able to succeed. So anyways, long version short, as we're talking about Mizzou's pass defense, I also kind of wanted to bring up their pass catchers. They just don't have a lot of playmakers right now offensively still. And the tight end passing game worked in this game in particular, but Kiki Chisholm was really the only guy out there that was consistently making plays for Mizzou offensively, other than Tyler Beatty, and we'll get to him. But it was really just Kiki Chisholm that I trusted to make plays.
Yeah, I mean, Towski Dove found a couple holes in the zone here and there.
And by the way, Kiki only made one. Like, it was the big play that he made.
Yeah, when he kind of boxed out the guy and drew pass interference, and yeah, that was great. But yeah, he's not. He also had the big drop right on third down, you know, and it's like, okay. So, I mean, yeah, the receiving core, guess what? Didn't magically get better just because we added Mookie Cooper and Dominic Lovett. You know, Mookie hasn't played in 2 years, and of course now he's injured, and then Dominic Lovett is a freshman. You can't expect much out of him. It's a build, right? This goes back to the overall theme you talked about in your piece today. I think you and I have talked about it before. This is a process. This is a very long process. You don't just get to skip steps 4, 5, and 6 and beat Kentucky, who has their program installed, their culture installed. This is what we're going to do. They have it rolling. You don't just beat that team, you know, 10 times out of 10, just because you have an M on your helmet and they have a K. Okay. So this takes a while. There's a lot of promise. There's a lot of talent. It's just got to get there. And so the receiving core certainly isn't there. Towski Dove, the zone busting kind of guy. Kiki Chisholm, big play here and there. Dominic Lovett needs to develop. I was surprised Barrett Bannister really wasn't on the field until the last drive. And like, that's your first down maker. If you started trying him out, put him out there more, I wouldn't be mad. Would you?
I'm fine with it. I mean, why not? Right. At this point, it's just about finding guys that can go out there and make plays. And there was a moment last year where it became, okay, Nico, hey, he catches the football. Let's get him on the field. Towski Dove, he catches the football. Okay, throw him out there. And then you would have Barrett Bannister out there in the slot, and it wasn't super dynamic. Nobody's going to be terrified, and their corners aren't going to start running backwards at the snap of the ball because they're scared of getting beat deep. But sometimes it's okay to just have dudes that are out there that block their asses off, that end up catching the football when it's thrown to them, and they bump that success rate that you talk so much about. On first and 10, get 5 yards. On third and 6, get 5 yards. On third and 3, catch that 4-yard in-breaking route and drop down in front of the down markers. That way you can live to fight another set of downs. Right now, Missouri hasn't been doing that consistently. There are moments when they do. There are drives when it looks great. And then the next drive, they get out there and it's a drop and a route that was cut a little bit short, and a pretty well-thrown ball that would have required a good play by the receiver that doesn't quite get made. And then you're off the field, and we're talking about a punt to the opponent, and that's where we are right now. I thought Connor Bazelak played pretty well. I didn't think it was perfect, but I thought he played pretty well, all things considered. And he did some things on the ground that I loved to see. Yeah. That is something that he needs to be able to do for this team to reach their full potential. But the offense was just, it was solid. It was okay. It was kind of what I expected it to be. They weren't really the problem in that game so much as the defense was.
No, they were not. Now, the problem is just a lack of depth. Certainly in the receivers, definitely in the running backs. I mean, God, Elijah Young's usage rate was not good. Once again, very, very low. But again, you were down 14 basically from the jump. And yeah, you can mess around and get some younger guys in there to, you know, try and make plays and get some experience and all that stuff. But you're also trying to play to win, especially when you're only, you know, second game of the year and against a division foe. You are trying to win the game. And, you know, if Eli Drinkwitz thinks these guys that he's trying out are the ones that are going to give him the best chance to win football games, then those are the guys that are going to see the field. That's fine. I'm not opposed to that. you're starting to see, you know, all right, well, we're not, again, reiteration, we're not there yet. And there's just not a lot of options. The tight end passing game is there for defenses that are overlooking it. Tyler Beatty can be used in any way that you want, running the ball, catching the ball. Did you see, he is going to be the only Missouri Tiger, knock wood, things stay healthy, to have over 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards passing in a career. Did you see that?
Yeah. Which is kind of wild, because yeah. I would have assumed that there had to be somebody, but you think about it, it makes some sense. I mean, it's hard to do that. It's hard to be such a dual threat at this level. There's not a lot of running backs that can do what Tyler Beatty does, and that's what makes him so unique, and it's also what's going to make him so intriguing to NFL teams next year. Mm-hmm. Man, this dude is making himself a lot of money right now.
Yeah,
I mean, he is... This is what a third round NFL draft pick at the running back position looks like, or a second round NFL draft pick at the running back position looks like. So far this year, he leads all of college football with 392 yards from scrimmage. He's the first Missouri player in at least the last two decades to have at least 100 rushing yards and 100 receiving yards in the first two games of the season. I mean, what we're watching is quite literally unprecedented by Missouri running backs, by Missouri anything. And we mentioned all offseason, hey, the comp for him is probably Nyheim Hines, mm-hmm. because Nyheim Hines was the running back at NC State that Eli Drinkwitz had, that went from pass catching, jack of all trades type of a running back to, in his junior season, oh, this dude's a bell cow now. Okay, cool. That's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And Hines had 1,250 yards from scrimmage in his junior year. He had 1,100 yards from scrimmage that year in the running game. He basically gave up all responsibilities in the passing game when he became a bell cow. Mm-hmm. That's the opposite of what's happening right now with Beatty. Beatty's on pace for 1,600 rushing yards and 750 receiving yards right now. He's not going to get there. Like, that's not going to sustain itself over the course of a full season.
There's no other option outside of, no other reliable option, I should say, outside of Beatty. I mean, this is like, you have to be good, and then the circumstances have to fit. And it's like, he's the only guy we can really trust, so he's going to get all the touches. I don't rule it out. That's all I'm saying.
What do you think the ceiling is? Let's play this game for a second, because the game, we've kind of broke it down a little bit. Yeah. Like, it was what it was, and we all know what it was.
Yeah.
What do you think the ceiling is for Tyler Beatty this year?
The ceiling, the absolute ceiling. I'm going to say 1,100 rushing yards, 10 touchdowns, and
total, or 10 rushing touchdowns?
10 rushing touchdowns. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, 10 rushing touchdowns. And then I will say 850 yards to the air.
Wow.
And 5 touchdowns. I think
I'll take the under on the receiving yards, and I think I would take the over on the rushing yards.
Ooh. Okay. Okay. I mean, combined. Okay. How about this? Combined, does he get over 2,000 yards this year?
No.
No,
okay. I think he ends up with around 1,500 in the 12 game season. I'm talking about regular season.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
And assuming health, if we assume health and in the regular season, I think he gets right around 1,500 yards from scrimmage, which would be an unbelievable season, by the
way. Absolutely incredible. Yeah. I don't know. There's just no other option. And yeah, and
you're right. I mean, it's possible. The numbers that I just read, the 1,600 rushing yards and 750 receiving yards, that seems laughable. until I heard you say that he's the only option, I was like, yeah, you're right. And in games like Kentucky, or when Missouri is playing against like Texas A&M or Florida or Arkansas, I mean, they're going to go to him a lot because they have to. He's their best chance to win.
Mm-hmm. He is. And you don't want him to hit that, because you don't want him to have to do that. You want someone to pop up. It would be incredible if he did that. That'd be awesome. Sad, but awesome. Like, sad for the team, awesome for him. So I'm a little mixed on whether I want to see that or not. But point is, he is the best player on this team by far. And I don't know what's going to happen now. Obviously, Connor Bazelak took a hit towards the end of the, well, I guess he got hurt earlier in the game, and then it started acting up towards the end of the game. I don't know if he sees the field against SEMO. You like to think you don't need him, but you also don't want to assume anything with the team that we're currently at. You know, you don't want to overlook anybody. You certainly can't afford to overlook anybody. So I don't know how much the ones are going to play this week. But you know, for Bazelak's health, for Beatty's health long term, I would expect not a lot of usage for those guys. So maybe the rate that you're talking about, we're not going to see. But yeah, it was just, you know, Tyler Beatty's awesome. Connor Bazelak is good. And everyone else needs to max out as soon as possible, or else this could be a very long year.
Next week's going to be fun to watch, because Missouri has the type of skill players that will make that game fun to watch. And what I mean by that is, when I said earlier, hey, yeah, there's only like two things that Dominic Lovett does well right now. Hey, you know what he does well that can really look awesome against a team like SEMO?
Yeah,
it's running deep and scoring a 70-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
A guy like Elijah Young, you know what's going to look really cool against SEMO? When he runs very fast off tackle and just outsprints everybody to the edge. Yeah. Connor Bazelak, I know that the deep ball has kind of been a question mark for him. It's going to look real good against SEMO. I can guarantee you that. Jalen Carlisle, he's going to have an awesome play defensively where he just knocks out a receiver coming across the middle. I mean, they're going to have some really exciting plays this week against SEMO. So if you're a Missouri fan that's a little down after the game on Saturday, I get it. I feel for you. I'm right there with you, man. That was a tough one to watch and a tough one to swallow at the end, given the way that they came back in it. Next week's going to get you back on your feet a little bit. BC is where things get really interesting, because that could be another swing game. Well, that could be. That will be another swing game on Missouri's schedule. They struggled a little bit with UMass, which I wasn't anticipating.
Mm-hmm.
They gave up a little bit more defensively than I was expecting. Missouri versus Boston College is probably... Kentucky was an interesting measuring stick to see where they are on their life cycle. Boston College is an interesting measuring stick just for the here and now, where Missouri's at as a team.
Yeah. Also, just the style of play. You know, over the summer, mm-hmm. I was dreading BC, because the one thing they did, which was throw the ball, is the one thing that Missouri wasn't very good at, or at least conceivably. Well, okay, that's not true anymore. Also, Phil Dracovic is injured, I guess. We're 2 weeks away, so who knows what it's going to be in that time frame. But like, if you're walking into a situation where the Eagles can only really throw it and they're down their awesome quarterback, I mean, I'd feel better about it, but also this is a Missouri team on the road, which you can never trust.
Yeah.
I think I am feeling, oh, I'm going to say it out loud. Oh my God. I'm feeling better about BC as time goes on. Let's see what happens this week for both teams before we get there. But that is going to be a really interesting game. And because we lost Kentucky, it is in our best interest to win that, so you can at least get through the first trimester of the season 3-1 and looking at a chance to win North Texas and then just get a handful of games in the SEC to get bowl eligible. And that's what we're looking for. It's going to be big. SEMO, I'm mostly, get right game for the ones, and then let's see how many backups we can get and feel good and do some fun stuff and put it on.
Get this one over early. This can't be like Missouri State a few years ago where Mizzou ends up allowing SEMO to stay in this one. I don't think SEMO has the type of talent that Mizzou had a really good receiver that year that just kind of shredded Mizzou. SEMO's not that type of a team, but regardless of what their talent level is, just get it over early, man. Put 21 on the board in the first quarter, add another 14 in the second, and just put it on ice from there. Just get it over with. We should see a lot of Dawson Downing in this one. Let's see BJ Harris in the second half at running
Tyler
back.
Tyler Macon.
I want to, by the way, I do think there was a tell in this game. Whenever Connor Bazelak went out, it was not Tyler Macon coming into the game.
Brady Cook.
It was Brady Cook getting ready to come into the game. So as much as it says on the depth chart, it's an or there or whatever. No. Your number two quarterback right now is Brady Cook. And I did find that to be a little interesting as they had to make a decision there who they were going to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. Ideally it's so far gone that Macon does see the field.
For sure. That'd be great.
But we will see. Hey, and it's never fun to win a game or lose a game. Sorry. It's always fun to win a game. Never fun to lose it. It doesn't matter. Like the goals for this team are still on the table. All right. Kentucky is still a very good team. Will probably be the second best team in the East. Missouri is building to be that and then exceed it. So road games are tough. Young teams are inconsistent. offense did well. Defense is a work in progress. They'll figure it out this week. And we will dive into it later this week. We'll see what happens as we hear the coaches talk, the players talk about it, as we dive into the depth charts and what SEMO's been doing and figure out how this game is going to play out. But BK, any final thoughts before we leave for the Sunday recap show?
Yeah, this is why recruiting is important. And I know a lot of Missouri yeah. fans have grown frustrated by the whole like big picture talk, and I get it. But this is why when we talk about Missouri potentially getting Luther Burden, it's important, is because when you look over at the other sideline and Kentucky has one of those dudes at receiver, you could have that next year. That could be the type of impact that Luther Burden is able to have right away. Mm-hmm. When you look over at that other team in Kentucky and you see their NFL caliber offensive tackles, that's why it's important that Missouri has added two, depending on how the rankings end up shaking out, maybe three, four-star offensive linemen in next year's class. And why in 2023, mm-hmm. when there's four of them either in or near the state of Missouri and you've got a shot with any of them, it's super important that they're able to get at least two of them in that class. So this is what the build looks like. It takes adding in that talent. And I think what we're watching right now is we're seeing the level of talent that Barry Odom was able to add to this team. It wasn't good enough, man. He took too many guys that were mid-grade at best. And what you end up getting is, and this is no disrespect to the man, it's just the reality, Chris Turner at defensive end taking a lot of snaps again for I think the 22nd straight year. And when you have that kind of a player at defensive end who I think has one tackle on average per game in his Mizzou career,
yep,
it's just super limiting in what your overall ceiling is. And there's a reason why he's playing right now. It's because there's not a whole lot of guys that are better options. And that also plays into the recruiting that they had previously. There's just very little depth on this team. They're trying to fix that right now, and it's going to take time. They'll get there. I believe in this coaching staff to get the requisite level of talent in, but those guys don't come in and play right away very often in the SEC. It takes a little bit of time for them to develop into the player you want them to be, and you don't want them to get completely sunk because they stunk in their first year on campus. Give it time. Mm-hmm. Allow this to marinate a little bit. Down the road, you'll be able to see at Mizzou what we just saw from Kentucky, where you start taking off as a program.
Yeah. I mean, God, Mark Stoops won two games, I think, in his first 2 years or something like that. Look where he is now. A little bit of patience. Trust the process. You can get there, too. So we will we'll come back to you this Wednesday. So next episode dropping on Thursday. We'll talk about SEMO. We'll talk about everything else that's happened then. For now, lick your wounds. Get over it. We got another game on the schedule. That's nice. It's nice that you get to try again. But that's going to be the show for today. And as always, we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. You can leave a comment. You can rate us. We love all types of feedback from you all. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. He is at BK Sports Talk. And of course, you can follow the Rock'em flagship at Rock'em Nation and listen to BK on the radio in St. Louis, 101 ESPN, 10 to 3. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then,
Z-O-U.